Okay, so this is, yeah, just keep it at this distance.
We'll okay, there you go. Like that. My name is Peter DeMott. I'm from Ithaca, New York, in the United States of America.
You were once in the army. Can you tell something about that?
I was in the American military, first in the Marine Corps. I enlisted in the Marine Corps when I was about 20 years old and was trained in communications and then sent to Vietnam. And I worked in Vietnam, or was a Marine in Vietnam for 1 year. I arrived there in December of 1968, and I spent all of 1969 in Vietnam. And I worked as an air traffic controller in a tower, talking to the helicopter pilots. And I also worked on a switchboard. And most of the time I was on a base and was in a secure area, so I didn't really see any fighting. I never really directly killed anybody or anything like that. But I was part of the American military, which killed 2 million Vietnamese. There were about 58,000 American soldiers who were killed in Vietnam. But the Vietnamese, of course, suffered much more heavy casualties. About 2 million Vietnamese were killed, and about maybe 70 or 75% of those victims were children and women. And I'm very sorry that I was so naive and stupid as to go, but I am trying to atone for that now. So that's one of the reasons why I became a peace activist. I realized the mistake that I made.
And when was that?
It wasn't until, after I was in the Marine Corps, I was a civilian for about a year, and then I joined the United States Army, and I was in the Army for about 4.5 years. I was stationed in Turkey, and I worked in Ankara in the Turkish General Staff as an interpreter, translator. And it was while I was there that I began to travel around. I went to the Soviet Union and to France and to Germany and to Italy, and experienced life in different cultures, and I gradually became more aware of the unity of the human family and of the need for all of us to embrace one another despite any kind of race or nation or the artificial differences that are imposed on us by society.
And what did you notice of all the protests against the war in Vietnam? How was that for you?
Well, I didn't really pay much attention. I knew that there were some people that were opposed to the war, but I didn't really think much about it. I didn't pay any attention to it, really. So it didn't really help to change my consciousness very much. I sort of ignored the protests.
In relation to that, what do you think? How do you think one needs to work to get across to ordinary people or soldiers, since you say they it doesn't come across?
Yeah. Oh, I think everything help. I mean, I think that what different ways would be to help soldiers to realize the impact of a war on society. You know, stories. You know, accounts of veterans like myself. Accounts of the victims of the war, you know, people whose lives have been terribly suffered a great deal from the war. People have lost family members or been wounded or had their homes destroyed or have their lives disrupted by the war. I think.
But that wouldn't have come across to you, would it?
Well, yeah, I think it might have. If I had known in time, I think it would have influenced me. Yeah. It would have helped anyway. I think maybe not.
Can you describe some situation? How would that have looked to come? How old were you at the time?
I was 20 years old when I went in the military.
And how would that have had to look for it to touch you?
I think if I had seen children being maimed and killed, I think that really would have influenced. If I had known that I was responsible for killing children and killing innocent people, that would have helped me to realize that it was a terrible thing to do.
Well, how could you have been shown those?
Well, as I say, through photographs or maybe a video or interviews of family members who had experienced losses of loved ones, I think that would have helped.
And after that, what happened when you realized you told you saw more about the world and your ideas changed? What did you do then?
Well, I became involved in the Catholic worker movement, and I began to meet people that were opposed to war and were completely nonviolent. And with them, I began to do civil disobedience, you know, speaking out against the military and against the corporations that make weapons for the military, and then going to jail for having done that. And it really, society looks very different when you're in jail. I think it's an experience that will help people get a different perspective. And so that was very helpful to me, to begin to lead the life of a peace activist.
It sounds like a big step, going from the military to a Catholic worker group.
Yes, it was a very big step, and but one that I'm ashamed to say that I didn't take earlier. I wish that I had become a peace activist when I was very young, when I was in my teens or 20 years old. But and I'm very glad that I did make that step. But it was a very big step, and I think that it's a step that we all need to take to try to make the world say no to war, and refuse to cooperate in war, refuse to let the people in power make the war. So we not only won't fight ourselves, won't kill ourselves, but we need to be speaking out against the people that are fighting and killing and preparing for war.
When you went into the army, why did you do that?
Well, I think partly from the media and from movies. When I was a child, I was sort of taught to think of war as being exciting and an adventure and challenging. And there wasn't any sort of a negative characterization of war. So everything about war when I was a child made it glamorous and made it attractive. But when I was in, it was only later, when I became more mature, that I realized that war was really a very terrible thing, and that innocent people are killed, and that the environment is destroyed, and a lot of needless suffering is caused, and that doesn't really solve anything. That war only makes the next war more inevitable.
Were you involved in the plowshare action?
Yes, I've been involved in two plowshares actions. One in 1980, about 25 years ago now, and the other one in 1982. The first one involved a Trident submarine. Well, they both were against the Trident submarine in the United States, in Groton, Connecticut. And I was sent to prison for about 6 months, and then for the second one, I think I got another, was also sentenced to 6 months in prison for that one too.
Can you tell about the action? What did you do?
For the first one, I got into a van that belonged to the shipyard, and I used it to ram into the rudder of a submarine repeatedly, and I smashed the van and did a little bit of damage to the submarine. But so that was the first one, and then in the second one, that was by myself. I did that all alone. And the second one, I
would you explain how that happened?
Well, the shipyard was launching a submarine, a smaller submarine, and there was a big crowd of people that had come to witness this launch of the submarine. So while they were letting a lot of people in, and so while I went in with the big crowd, and while I was there, I noticed that there was a van on the dock there, right next to a very large Trident submarine. It's about 200 meters long. It's very long, and about four stories high, about 40 feet high. And it has, the Trident submarine has 24 nuclear intercontinental ballistic missiles on it. That's what they carry. And just one Trident submarine, the firepower, the destructive power of one Trident submarine could destroy the whole world. And the United States Navy has, I think, maybe 18 or 20 of them now. So, but I saw this van there, right, not far from the submarine, and so I the keys were in it, and so I got into that van, and then I used it to I backed it in reverse into the rudder of the submarine, maybe four or five times, six times, and smashed the van very badly, and did some damage to the rudder of the of the submarine. That was the first time.
In the middle of the day?
Yes, it was in the middle of the day. There were large crowd, maybe 2,000 people were there. But they were a little bit away from me. They were watching the smaller submarine being launched. So that's how it happened. And
what happened then?
Well, the security people came and they stopped me and they arrested me and took me to the police, and then I went right to jail right away, and then I was went to trial, and then I was spent about six or seven months in the jail for that.
How much had you planned?
It wasn't planned at all. It was spontaneous, but it happened very shortly. That was in December of 1980, and 3 months earlier, in September of 1980, the very first Plowshares action took place in Pennsylvania, when 8 people went into the plant in King of Prussia, Pennsylvania, and damaged a nuclear missile nose cone. That was why I was inspired by that, and was thinking about that I did this spontaneous action.
So if the van hadn't been there, nothing might have happened?
Might not have, right, yeah. It was partly chance and partly inspiration from this other action.
So, in fact, you were the second one to do the plowshare action?
That's correct, that was the second plowshares action, yeah.
And what happened? You didn't prepare for a support group, and what happened with you and with the people around?
Well, I was very, very strongly supported by members of the peace community in that area, and the trial went well. I was able to explain to the jury why I did the action, and told people that I thought I had a moral obligation to do that. You know, they listened, but they found me guilty. They couldn't. At that time, I think juries were much more conservative. I think more and more people begin to realize how destructive war is and how dangerous nuclear weapons are, and that they potentially could end all life on this planet, more and more people begin to realize that, and the climate is changing. I think more people would be willing to admit that what I had done was a sensible and rational and sane thing to do.
How did people react on your action?
Well, there in that town in Groton, Connecticut, where they make the Trident submarine, and the economy is very dependent on that, on the shipyard and on the work there, many people were very negative and very reacted very strongly against what I had done. But I think it sort of depends on different people in different parts of the country have a different idea of if it's appropriate or not. And but I think the climate is changing all the time, and more people are becoming aware that nuclear weapons, especially, are terribly destructive, and we need to begin to eliminate them and to dismantle them.
And still, there are not more plowshares action being done, but rather, it seems to me, sort of a slowdown.
Yes, I think it's been about 2 or 3. No, maybe about 2 years. I think the Riverside plowshares action, I think, is the latest one that I'm aware of, and that took place in New York City. And the 4 activists who did that action were not prosecuted. They were arrested and held for a brief period, but then they were never prosecuted. So that might be indicative of a change in the attitude of the authorities, a change in the attitude of the public.
And you have to go to trial yourself this week?
That's right. On Friday of this week, on the 11th of March, I need to be in. I have to appear in court, in the federal court, to begin the process of the trial for having protested against the war in Iraq. And that protest was not a plowshares protest, but it was a protest in which my two of my sisters-in-law, Claire Grady and Teresa Grady, and our friend Danny Burns, 4 of us went to a military recruiting station in the Ithaca area, and we went into the lobby of this station, and we poured our own blood, a small quantity of our own blood, on literature, recruiting literature in the lobby, and also on the posters and banners, and also we got some blood on the American flag. And we were tried in April of 2004 for that protest, and the 12 jurors could not agree. It has to be, in our system, a unanimous agreement that the accused is guilty of the crime, and 9 of the jurors would have found us innocent. They agreed that what we did was a good thing to do, that we were justified in having done that, but 3 of the jurors wanted a conviction, and so the whole court process ended in a mistrial. But now that the case is being reopened again, and this time in the federal court.
Can you explain about the blood, because it's an important part in the plowshare action?
Yes, we use the symbol of blood because it is symbolic of life, and also at the same time is symbolic of death. The blood of, you know, all of our blood unites us as human beings, but in war, blood is tragically spilled and wasted, and precious life is lost. We use this symbol to remind ourselves and to remind the public, to remind the officials, that in war, people, innocent people, die. And we want to make a strong, nonviolent statement. We don't think that pouring our blood was violent at all, compared to the destruction and the pollution, the loss of life, the chaos that come from war. So we were willing to use this symbol to alert people to this danger and to the seriousness of the situation.
So you take your own blood and you pour it.
Yes, a nurse, a friend, took some blood from each of us, and we poured our blood in a little bottle, and then we carried the bottles to the recruiting station, and then we poured our blood there. I think only two of us actually gave the blood, but then we divided it amongst the 4 of us, and then we each poured some.
How do people react on that?
Well, some people understand the symbolism and appreciate the symbol, but others don't. Others think it's barbaric or terrible. But I really believe that it's a good thing to do. That it helps people to realize how serious the issue is and how serious war is.
What do you think is the general effect on people of, for example, this action, like in Ithaca?
Our Ithaca community is pretty progressive and pretty liberal, and we had a lot of support. Many, many people came out in support of our action, and many of them understood the action and understood the need to do it, and we're very happy that we had done it. More and more people realized that the war in Iraq was wrong, it was unjust, it was illegal, that it was started under the pretext of looking for weapons of mass destruction, but the Bush administration and the generals in the Pentagon knew, even before the war started, that there were no weapons of mass destruction there. They used that as a reason, you know, a lie. They told us all a lie, that that was why the war had to be fought. But more and more people realized that this was a lie.
How is the resistance against the war in the United States?
Well, I think maybe to my mind, one very important fact was that on the last day of August of 2004, in New York City at the Republican National Convention, when Mr. Bush was going there to receive the endorsement of his party for his presidential candidacy, that there were 1,800 people were, this is the largest, I think, or like almost 1 million people came to New York to demonstrate against Bush and also against the war. I think that we can look on this very, very large crowd. As I say, it was the largest political protest in American history. 1 million people came to New York City. And just on that one day, there were 1,800 people arrested. This, I think, is symbolic of the mindset of many, many Americans. More and more people realize that Mr. Bush does not speak for them, that he's done some terrible things and has really made the world all the more unstable and unsafe, because the war on terrorism is just creating terrorists. We're not finding terrorists or containing terrorists. We're making more terrorists all the time, because we're destroying their lives, we're destroying their loved ones, we're just angering and embittering the whole world against the United States.
At the time, like when you were going into the recruitment office, what are your any memory flashes from going to that place with the bottle and carrying out the action?
Well, I remember that when I was young, that I thought of the military as being, as I said earlier, an adventure, or as being glamorous, and I just hoped that what I did there was going to help people realize that it wasn't about adventure or about glamour, that it was about killing, about killing innocent people, children and women and people that were not caught up in combat. And so I hoped and I prayed that my action, the action that we took, would help people to realize that. Because I'm convinced that a new world is only going to be built on two things. One is on justice, because most of the world is the Western world, America, Europe, the wealthier countries of the world have a lot of wealth that the rest of the world does not have, and there's always this great inequality and injustice. So I think that the richer, wealthier countries of the world are going to have to learn to share and to care about people that have very limited resources, that have little or nothing, that don't even have the necessities of life. So we have to begin to try to build a world based on justice and also on love, and especially the love of forgiveness, that we have to learn to forgive each other and ask pardon. And the United States, in my opinion, has a lot of, has to repent and has to ask forgiveness of the many, many countries around the world for what we've done worldwide. And it's this that will help to bring about peace, and not trying to catch or kill a terrorist. That's not going to help anything.
In terms of being active and doing actions, do you have any? Are there any things one should avoid that you've or any ways of thinking or things in an action?
Mm-hmm. Well, one thing to avoid is any kind of violence. We try to always be nonviolent. And another thing is not to be discouraged, not to give up. We have to keep coming again and again and again. And if we're put in jail, or if we're made to look foolish or whatever, we mustn't get discouraged by that. We have to keep coming back. So those are two things that come immediately to mind.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.